and a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by the good folks, Melissa Gott and her team over at The Law Group. Visit them online, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We've got some pretty big breaking international news this morning as it relates. It's got a domestic tie, of course, as well, to the ongoing trade war tariff battle that we have seen unfold in this administration. And, you know, I don't know that I would describe myself as fence sitting on the issue. I understand the arguments that are being made on both sides. And we've talked to individuals on both sides of it. We've had economist Dr. Vance Ginn on the show. Hopefully he'll be joining us tomorrow to talk about some Fed interest rate cuts. We'll maybe talk tariffs a little bit as well. Individuals who are on the side of free market economy. Individuals that say these trade wars in an attempt to try and ink more lucrative deals. In the meantime, you are burying or severely hurting the American consumer. You are putting a huge amount of stress, pressure, and pain on the middle class. I understand that argument and that side of it. And I also understand where the president stands on this, right? We are of the opinion and of the mindset that we are in this, you know, free market economy where trade can happen, but we know in practicality and in reality, that is not always the case. Right? You see countries that refuse to import U.S. goods, and the president sees that as a major issue in his attempt to make America great again, so he retaliates against the various countries and nations and tries to force them to the table to accept U.S. goods. So I get and I see and I understand both sides. I will say that, you know, and this is something that, can kind of get you in trouble with those on the right. There is no question about it that tariffs in the short term are an additional tax on the U.S. consumer. I mean, whether there are long-term benefits is regardless of the situation. In the short term, with tariffs, goods that you consume, that we consume as Americans, cost more. There is no way to beat around that bush. There is no way to argue that that is not the case. That is absolutely what happens with tariffs. Companies that produce products that have imports material goods that go into their products that are coming from nations with high tariffs, you and I are paying for that. The company that is producing said good is not eating the tariffs. Now, they might be eating some or a little bit, but at the end of the day, that increase in cost due to increased input costs from tariffs, you and I, the American consumer, are paying for. And so the question has always been, and this is where I tend to agree with the Trump administration, is some short-term pain worth a long-lasting, more sustainable global economy with trade between the United States and other nations? I think the president is right about that. I do think that the United States has been taken advantage of as it relates to some pretty miserable trade deals in the past. And the president's attempt here to bring a litany of different nations and countries to the table is a good one. And I think for the most part, Americans, I think, understand that concept. The question is, can they financially hold out? While they might want the United States to have stronger trade relationships in the future, the million-dollar question, and this is always why I've been of the mindset that these trade wars and these tariff wars are a huge gamble for the Trump administration, do they have the pure financial means to do so? The question is, and to lay it out a little bit more simply, the middle class has been absolutely hammered over the last couple of years. We have seen prices freaking explode for the middle class, and not in a good way. Everything is costing more. Everything is skyrocketing in price. The last couple of years have been really, really tough for the middle class American consumer. And so the question has always been, from my vantage point, does the middle class have the financial ability to wait potentially 6, 12, 18, 24 months for some of these deals to work themselves out? That's been the million-dollar question since day one. Do they have the extra savings? Do they have the cash on hand? And can they deal with some of these short-term pains that we know will exist when you get into these trade wars to have on the other side a better outcome long-term? That's been the million-dollar question from my vantage point from day one with these tariffs, with these trade wars. And so the president this week was on a tour of Asia. His last stop over the last 2 days, he has been in South Korea, not only meeting with leaders of South Korea itself, but other nations throughout Asia. And while we were asleep last night, or hopefully asleep last night, President Trump did meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping, and we've got some good news coming out of that meeting, that high-stakes meeting that took place with the Chinese Communist Party leader. The two leaders sat down in a building on a South Korean airbase at approximately 11:15 a.m. local time for bilateral discussions. This is the first time that Trump and Xi have met each other in person since Trump reclaimed the presidency in January. They did have a meeting during his first term in office. That took place in Japan in 2019. They both attended the G20 summit. White House officials scheduled a window of just under 2 hours for a chat between the U.S. delegation and the Chinese delegation before the president packed up shop and headed back to the United States. He is in the air now, will be landing in the United States a little bit later on today. The president also met with the South Korean president to discuss investments and security, but no trade deal was officially signed with South Korea. Xi will remain in South Korea on November the 1st to hold bilateral meetings with the South Korean president. So this is what we are learning from this meeting, as a variety of issues were on the table as the two leaders met to discuss a variety of things. Tariffs, of course, fentanyl, that has been one of the big issues that the president has continually pointed the finger at China, not only importing of fentanyl, but fentanyl precursors that are being shipped by Chinese companies and being flown into the U.S. market has been a major problem. Global supply chains, Indo-Pacific security, a whole bunch of a litany of issues that they discussed. A Chinese spokesperson who confirmed the meeting called the high stakes level relationship between Trump and Xi irreplaceable in a strategic relationship between the two countries that he said would be an in-depth exchange. President Donald Trump has said that the list of issues that he wants to raise with Xi is long and expects cooperation and concession from Beijing on several items. Trump and U.S. officials have also signaled that the 100% tariffs are no longer on the table, given that Beijing is expected to hold off on disruptive export restriction programs for things like rare earth. The United States and China had imposed tariffs reaching triple digits on each other back in April amid escalating tensions. However, those tariffs have been paused several times as some discussions and some negotiations have taken place. The next deadline was scheduled for November the 9th, but is now going to be pushed off. So this is what we are learning from the meeting. President Donald Trump calling it an amazing meeting between him and Xi taking place in South Korea. Again, this happening overnight. And I've got some audio from President Donald Trump, who had this bilateral meeting. This is some of the exchange that took place late overnight here on the East Coast between Trump and Xi. It's got some other music or audio playing from somewhere. See if I can figure out where that is. Okay, yes. Here is Trump and Xi. This is in South Korea it was Thursday their time, still Wednesday night here on the East Coast. Take a listen.
And it feels very warm seeing you again because it's been many years. Since your re-election, we have spoken on the phone 3 times, exchanged several letters, and stayed in close contact. And our joint guidance, China-US relations have remained stable on the whole. Given our different national conditions, we do not always see eye to eye with each other. And it is normal for the two leading economies of the world to have frictions now and then. And in the face of winds, waves, and challenges, you and I, at the helm of China-US relations, should stay the right course and ensure the steady sailing forward of the giant ship of China-US relations. I always believe that China's development goes hand in hand with your vision to make America great again. Our two countries are fully able to help each other succeed and prosper together. Over the years, I have stated in public many times that China and the United States should be partners and friends. This is what history has taught us and what reality demands. A few days ago, in the latest round of consultation, our two economic and trade teams reached basic consensus on addressing our respective major concerns and made encouraging progress.
So that's what you're hearing, the voice, obviously not the voice of President Xi, but you're hearing him through a translator as this meeting was taking place. You can see from the U.S. side, you've got, of course, President Donald Trump himself, Susie Wild sitting at the table. You don't see that typically very often. Scott Bassett is there as well. A couple of other people. Howard Lutnick also looks like he's in that meeting as well. So very, very high stakes as it relates to what sides were at the meeting. And with that, you had these bilateral discussions, this bilateral meeting taking place. You heard some interesting commentary there about, from President Xi about what is going on and how he believes that the United States and the development with China's development, it goes hand in hand with the president's mission to make America great again. Some very interesting commentary there from him. And what we are learning this morning, at least as being reported by Fox News, President Donald Trump said that he will cut tariffs on Chinese imports after that highly anticipated meeting with President Xi. Again, that meeting taking place in South Korea, citing some new understandings on fentanyl enforcement, farm trade, and this is pretty big, a pause on rare earth export limits. Since returning to the White House in January, President Donald Trump has levied major tariffs on Chinese imports, a move that prompted Beijing to tighten its control over exports of rare earth elements. Both leaders signaled interest in reducing tensions to avoid further shock to the global economy. Ahead of Thursday's summit, U.S. and Chinese aides signaled the discussions would center on tariffs, advanced technology exports, and supply chain competition, key sticking points that have long defined the relationship between the United States and China. Trump told reporters he believed that the two sides could reach common ground. After the talks, President Trump said that he and Xi had, quote, an amazing meeting and that both sides had reached an outstanding group of decisions on key economic and security issues. The president said that Xi agreed to begin immediately purchasing U.S. soybeans and other farm goods and that China would work, quote, very hard to block fentanyl from entering the United States. And I'm just going to tell you this, in terms of you might think to yourself, China's going to purchase soybeans. Who the hell cares? If you are not familiar with the North Carolina economy in particular, first of all, agriculture is the largest business. North Carolina's got a lot of business, a lot of technology, a lot of other sectors that are very prominent, but agriculture is still the largest business in the state of North Carolina. I mean, when you look at the economic success of this state, a lot of that is driven by the agricultural industry. North Carolina also happens to be one of the largest soybean producers anywhere in the world. And so when we learned earlier this year that China would stop its purchase of soybean, that had, of course, sent a shockwave through the agricultural industry here in North Carolina. Not only is ag the largest business, but soybean is one of the largest exports that the state of North Carolina has, not only to other places throughout the United States, but throughout the rest of the world. You also look at things like tobacco, a major industry here in North Carolina. China is one of the largest importers of tobacco anywhere on the world as well. So these trade talks and discussions, while for many of us, we look at, okay, what are we buying on Amazon? What are we buying at Walmart or whatever? Are those prices going up? If there is not a more permanent deal that comes forward, if these tensions continue to rise, that could be a major problem for North Carolina's economy. And it will affect every corner of this state. I mean, all from the mountains all the way to the coast. It is a large, large economic driver that employs hundreds of thousands of people. Within not only within agriculture, but all of the industries surrounding it. I mean, you look here, the port of Wilmington, the port up at Morehead City, a lot of the boats going in and out, bringing a North Carolina grown product and shipping those products internationally. I mean, it is a massive business that has tentacles throughout the rest of North Carolina's economy. So the fact that China, according to the reporting from Trump over at Fox News, that they're going to purchase U.S. soybean and other farm goods, which I presume tobacco would fall into, that is freaking massive. I mean, that is a huge deal, not only for the U.S., but I would say even more the state of North Carolina and producers who were wondering what the hell they were going to do with potentially millions upon millions of pounds worth of soybean. Because if the if China wasn't going to purchase those products, there's no other place to put them. There's not another large market to put that stuff in. There's an article over at a Carolina Journal back in early October. Soybean is one of the top five cash crops in North Carolina. At the time, Charles Hall, who is the executive director of the North Carolina Soybean Producer Association, told Carolina Journal, quote, China has not placed any order for new crop soybeans in the current marketing year, which started on September the 1st. Listen to this. China bought 30% of the U.S. soybean crop in recent years, and overall, China buys 60% of the global soybean supply annually. Roughly 10 to 12% of soybeans grown in North Carolina are exported, a relatively small share compared to other states. However, according to Hall, our biggest customers are also in North Carolina. So you've got a lot of domestic use of soybean, but 12% export, that is a significant percentage. That is a large amount. And so when you're hearing and these soybean producers are getting ready to harvest their crop and they're told, well, hey, China's not purchasing, what the hell are you supposed to do with all that extra product? I mean, you can't sit on it. You can't just wait and it's not going to be good next year. I mean, you got to get this stuff out. And this stuff is years in the planning, folks. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be some agricultural expert, but I know enough about ag. You have to plan this stuff out, in some cases, years in advance. I mean, these things don't just happen immediately. And so you've got farmers that are, you know, planning out what their crop yield is going to look like 2-3 years in advance. And so when all of the sudden they have expected China to purchase however many millions of dollars worth of North Carolina soybean, and then they find out China hasn't purchased anything, these producers are screwed. They've already invested the money. The crop is already planted. In some cases, it's close to harvesting, and now they have no buyer. Right, so that is a major issue, and it is one of the concerns that many have voiced as it relates to tariffs. What do you do when you've got small family farms or even medium-sized farms across states like North Carolina that have already invested, in some cases, millions of dollars for this year or years worth of growing said crop, and then you don't have a buyer? You don't have a market. Now, fortunately, North Carolina is a little bit more sheltered than some other states where you've got like 80%+ of their soybean product being shipped off to places like China. Because North Carolina has such a large agricultural industry, the soybean is used by a lot of farmers for animals. So there is a nice baked-in internal market, but you can't account for 12% of your product going to waste. I mean, that is boom or bust for farmers. So this is a major part of this negotiation that the president brought forward. Trump said that he would cut the tariff rate on Chinese imports by 10 points from 20 to 10%, according to his decision. However, an aide clarified that the rates would be closer to 45 to 47% in response to Xi's promise to crack down on the flow of fentanyl. With President Trump saying, quote, "I believe he," referring to Xi, "is going to work very hard to stop the death that's coming in." The two sides also reached an understanding on rare earth exports as China agreed to pause planned export controls for a year. This is a major win as well. A senior administration official clarified that both leaders agreed to revisit this agreement next year and that the agreement at that time could be extended. So at least in the short term, until there's another meeting and more bilateral conversations, China's export on rare earth is that the pause that was going to take place is now not going to happen. And you might shrug your shoulders at that and say, who cares? We don't need this rare earth from China. That, unfortunately, is not the case. We do, in fact, need the rare earth from China. Due to overburdensome regulation in the United States, it is incredibly hard for rare earth to be mined stateside. You've got federal entities, you've got state-level entities and agencies that make it practically damn near impossible for rare earth producers in the United States. It is a very, very hard business. There are some companies in the rare earth sector that are doing well right now as some of these talks have unfolded, and it looked like there was going to be essentially a full-on stop of rare earth imports into the United States from China. But that's really not practical. I was reading another story this morning over at CarolinaJournal.com talking about this, and this is a quote from this story. China now produces more than 90% of the world's processed rare earth metals. Over 90%. And what are those rare earth metals used for? Any sort of silicon dyes, any sort of chips, any sort of pretty much any piece of electronics that you are buying has some level, even though it might be small amounts, but some level of rare earth metals, rare earth material. If you have anything that is smart controlled, whether it's a smart controlled light switch, maybe you've got a washer or dryer that connect to the Wi-Fi, I've got one of those home robot vacuum things. Any of those things have rare earth. And when you've got China producing 90%+ of the world's processed supply and them saying, oh, we're just going to stop exports, that would have sent prices for any device, which is almost everything now that has a computer chip in it, through the roof. That would have been a major, major problem for U.S. consumers to deal with. And so that has also been paused at least for the next year. That's the plan right now. Trump and Xi will continue conversations about that in the future. The president described the outcome of the deal as a, quote, one-year framework agreement aimed at being renewed annually, with President Trump telling reporters, we have a deal. Every year we'll renegotiate the deal, but I think it'll go on for a long time. Trump also said the administration announced plans for reciprocal visits, with the U.S. president traveling to China in April. That is wild. It is not often at all that the U.S. president travels to China. And Xi is set to visit the United States sometime later this year. So obviously the calendar running pretty short on that, just over 2 months left in the year at this point. So we'll see exactly what that's going to look like. But Xi visiting the U.S., Trump visiting China, that seemingly would indicate that things are trending in the right direction. The meeting lasted roughly an hour and 40 minutes, concluded with a brief photo opportunity before the two leaders went their separate way. As I noted, Xi is staying in South Korea for some additional meetings with South Korean officials. Trump boarded Air Force One and is now making his way back to the United States. So things do appear to be trending in the right direction as it relates to the trade, ongoing trade deals, ongoing trade discussions, trade war. And the largest, of course, has been between the United States and China. And let's be clear about this. And I talked about this a couple months ago, but I'll reiterate it again. The U.S. needs China, and China needs the U.S. From the Chinese standpoint, we are the largest consumer of what we call cheap Chinese goods. I mean, you walk into any big box store, go on Amazon, the vast majority of those products, especially smaller trinkety things, they are produced almost exclusively in China. There is no larger market for China to sell said goods but the United States. And without the U.S. buying these cheap Chinese products, which I'm not getting into the discussion this morning over buying U.S. versus buying China, I'm looking at the situation that exists. With the U.S. hooked on these cheap Chinese products, every single one of us are, and maybe you're not, but I know I am, and most other people are, that is a major business for China. They cannot afford to not have those products making their way into the United States. They cannot afford the American consumer turning off the spigot on Chinese goods. That is something that their economy cannot sustain. On the U.S. front, we as a U.S. economy, more particularly the middle class consumer, has incredible amounts of buying power with some of these cheap products. Again, not getting into the discussion whether you should buy American or not. That is a fact. Lower middle class Americans have more buying power with these cheaper goods. That is just an absolute fact. And they rely on those products as well. It is an important part of the lower and middle class economies here in the United States. It's why brands and chains like Walmart are so popular, because individuals in those income brackets are able to go and have an incredible amount of purchasing power with these very, very cheaply imported goods. We need each other. Now, do we need to be wholly reliant on China? No, I don't think from a national security standpoint, that's a very good deal. I don't think that the United States should have to be on a whim to whatever China wants to do to have a thriving U.S. economy. That is set. I believe that would set up the United States for long-term disaster, whether you're talking about economically or militarily. Because if something happens and we get into some sort of actual conflict with China, they say, we're done with U.S. goods. We're done importing goods into the U.S. The U.S. economy is screwed. That's a major problem. And that is, I think, what is on the president's mind. He's said as much, talking about some of the implications of not having as many goods produced in the United States. The reality is, not everything can be produced in the U.S. U.S. producers don't want to produce everything in the U.S. There does need to be reliance on other nations. I don't think it's inherently a bad thing. But I do believe that you can kind of tip the scale and go a little bit too overboard with your reliance on foreign entities. China, of course, which would be one of those major groups that you would want to be careful with as it relates to the importing of goods. So that is what we are learning this morning. A good conversation between Trump and Xi. We will continue to track the progress of these talks, of these negotiations. Relief, hopefully, for some producers and middle-class consumers, as with some of these tariffs going down, that could hopefully will cause prices to dip back down at least a little bit in their levels. So all in all, a successful week for President Donald Trump in Asia. Meanwhile, you've got Chuck Schumer, the complete and total utter jackass that he is, on the Senate floor the other day. I think I played the clip yesterday of him saying, we're here trying to keep the government open, which of course Democrats are not, and Trump is gallivanting over in Asia. That's the mood, that's the mindset, that's the attitude from those on the political left. This was a very good trip for Trump. He got a lot out of this meeting with individuals from South Korea, China, other Asian nations. This was a very good trip for the president in an attempt to get closer to some of these deals, even if they're not completely inked up yet. Excuse me. Even if they're not fully agreed upon yet, very good negotiation, things progressing in a good direction, and that hopefully will mean better times ahead for the U.S. economy and the more predominantly middle-class and lower-middle-class Americans that rely on some of these cheaper international goods. We'll keep our eye on the details and provide them to you right here on the Nick Craig Show. We have got a lot more to get into this morning. Day 30 of the government shutdown upon us, rapidly approaching the November the 1st deadline. One more full day tomorrow before, according to Democrats, all hell breaks loose with SNAP benefits not being provided to individuals. SNAP, previously known as food stamps. We'll get into some of the commentary on that, including Senate leader John Thune being real fired up on the Senate floor, which is not something that you typically see from Thune. We'll hear from Senator Adam Schiff. We love him. He always has great commentary, right? Shifty Shift and a pencil neck Shift over there. We'll hear from him. Plus, J.D. Vance said he had a lot of really good things to say at a Turning Point USA event that happened last night. He was with Erica Kirk and, of course, the vice president as well in J.D. He had one specific line that I really want to highlight and talk a little bit about. So we'll get into some of those details as well. We're going to grab a quick word from Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell as early voting does continue across southeastern North Carolina. Just a couple more days for that today, Thursday, tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. No early voting on Sunday, no early voting on Monday, and of course, all culminating with Election Day coming up on Tuesday, November the 4th. So we'll get a quick word from Councilman Luke Waddell. We'll grab a quick break and return after this as the Nick Craig Show streams live weekday morning, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Luke Waddell, and I'm running for re-election to Wilmington City Council. 4 years ago, I promised strong, principled leadership. Leadership focused on public safety, infrastructure, and fiscal responsibility. I have worked every day to deliver on that promise, voting against unnecessary tax increases and wasteful spending while strongly supporting our police and fire departments. I'm ready to continue working for you. Please go to the polls and vote Luke Waddell for Wilmington City Council. Thank you.
Paid for by committee to elect Luke Waddell.
And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Looking forward to chatting with everybody tonight on our Patreon hangout. That is coming up at 7 p.m. tonight. You should have an email or log into your Patreon account for those that do support the show on Patreon. You'll find that link logged in there. 7 o'clock tonight. Still time to jump in there. If you are interested, you can do so over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Support the show financially as little as $5, $10 a month. You can get access to our monthly hangout and show notes each and every weekday. That is all available at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Looking forward to chatting with everybody tonight coming up at 7 p.m. All right, so here we go. Government shutdown day 30 does continue this morning as Democrats for now 13 times have had the opportunity to reopen the federal government and have refused to do so. Plain and simple. We talked a lot about this yesterday. I'm not going to relitigate the entire thing, but I'll state this once again. The Republicans brought forth a clean continuing resolution to reopen the federal government. Democrats are trying to rehash legislation that was the One Big Beautiful Bill that Republicans passed earlier this year. They don't like the fact that they lost on the One Big Beautiful Bill, so they have kept the government closed for the last 30 days in an attempt to try and win this battle. And the question has been, and I've had this same question as well, will Republicans crack under pressure? That is what we have typically seen in the past. Now, Donald Trump, I don't think there's any question that he was going to stand strong on this, but there was questions for individuals like John Thune, who is the Senate Majority Leader in the U.S. Senate, and House Speaker Mike Johnson, whether they would cave or fold to pressure. Right? They are in completely different governing bodies than the President of the United States. And of course, they're hearing from their Democrat colleagues. They're kind of taking it from all different sides on it. So the question has been, will Republicans in the Senate fold and give the Democrats what they want? And while it's not immediately clear what's going to happen yet, listening to Senator John Thune's comments on the Senate floor yesterday indicates he is pissed beyond belief, and I don't see him cracking at all. Take a listen to this.
And we've tried to do that 13 times. And you voted no 13 times. This isn't a political game. These are real people's lives that we're talking about. And you all have just figured out, 29 days in, that, oh, there might be some consequences. There are people running out of money. Yeah, we're 29 days in. And they've done their best to make sure that a lot of these programs are funded. But at some point, the government runs out of money. 13 times, people over here voted to fund SNAP. 13 times, they voted to fund WIC. My aching back. Finally realized this thing has consequences. Well, you know what? What Democrats are doing here? They're making plans to keep the shutdown going.
Well, there you go. And that's fine if they want to keep the shutdown going. And I saw that this tweet is from an individual who apparently worked for Senator John Thune for 3 years. And she wrote this on X, quote, "I worked for Senator Thune for 3 years and I never once heard him raise his voice or get angry. Democrats picked the wrong Senate Majority Leader to play political games with." And that to me is pretty substantial. I mean, when you've got somebody who spent 3 years working with Senator Thune saying, this is just not a guy that raises his voice. This is not a guy that gets all pissed off and angry. He's not, you know, kicking garbage cans and punching the wall. And then this video of him lambasting, screaming at Democrats on the Senate floor. I think that is a pretty strong indication that Thune is not moving off this issue, that he is not going to cave to the Democrats' pressure, fold to their ridiculously stupid and outrageous demands, and reopen the government. And, you know, the point he makes is one that needs to be driven home. 13 times, Senate Republicans have voted to fund SNAP. 13 times, Senate Republicans have voted to fund WIC. 13 times, Senate Republicans have voted to reopen and give federal employees pay. They have. 13 times. They are on the record every single time. It is the Democrats that have chosen not to do this. If they care so much, which I truly don't believe they do, if I'm being bluntly honest with you, there's a lot of outrage from the left on, oh my God, SNAP benefits are going to stop on Saturday. If they truly cared about SNAP benefits, they would have already solved this problem. I'm going to step out on a limb and say, I don't think they really care. They claim they care about the American public. They claim that they want to do good amongst the American people. I don't believe it because I believe that their hatred for Donald Trump, their hatred for Republicans outweighs everything else. And so I think Senate Democrats internally and maybe Democrats across the board in Washington, D.C. are saying, well, to hell with the American people. We've got to get one over on Trump. We've got to do everything in our power to stop Orange Man Bad. And if that means that individual low-income individuals that rely on SNAP don't get benefits for a couple of months or a couple of weeks, couple of months, then so be it. And I think that's genuinely the attitude that you're getting from Senate Democrats right now. Here's a couple of minutes of Adam Schiff, the senator from California. These are his thoughts on the government shutdown. I'm sure we'll learn some very insightful things from the great senator from California. Let's take a listen.
So tonight I want to talk about this image, this one right here, this indelible image of the destruction of the East Wing of the White House. Why is this image so transfixing? Why is this image so captivating, so appalling to so many millions of Americans, what does it say about the Trump administration? Well, first of all, this image is significant for a host of reasons, but perhaps most significant in that it is reflective of Donald Trump's main priority, his main priority right now, which is not making sure that people can afford their health care. It's not putting an end to the government shutdown. It is not trying to feed people who are hungry. Quite to the contrary, he is cutting off food assistance for poor people. No, the president's main priority is building a 90,000 square foot ballroom, a gilded ballroom. You don't have to take my word for that. Here's Carolyn Leavitt, the White House press secretary, talking about...
So we don't have to take Adam Schiff's word for it. And I'm just curious, how exactly does the senator from California believe that Donald Trump can single-handedly stop the shutdown? Donald Trump is not a voting member of the United States Senate. He does not have the ability to cast a vote in the Senate. If anything, it would be the vice president, who could be a tie-breaking vote. But Donald Trump himself does not have any control over what Senate Democrats choose to do with the shutdown. I mean, this is solely on them. And so you've got this 9.5 minute video published by Adam Schiff yesterday. And it just, to me, continues to show the tone deaf nature of Democrats. And I'm going to bring this up. This is very anecdotal, but I saw this yesterday. I was out at the Northeast Library for early voting for a couple of hours yesterday afternoon. And as I was in the parking lot talking to some folks working there, there were the Democrats set up on the other side of the street, which is, you know, fine. I mean, it's what you see at electioneering. You see Republicans on one side, Democrats on the other. But the Democrats were set up on the other side of the street with a Joe Biden and Kamala Harris cardboard cutout. And first, when I walked up, I didn't really pay much attention to it. I just kind of glanced at it quickly and looked away. I didn't think it was Biden and Harris. But then one of the individuals I was there with said, you know, look at the cutout that they've got. And that really, seeing a cardboard cutout of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris outside of the Democrats' tent at early voting yesterday, really was a strong indication to me that across the board, whether we're talking about Democrats in Washington, D.C., whether we're talking about Democrats in Raleigh, or whether we're talking about Democrats in Wilmington, they are so completely out of touch with the American people. They are so completely out of touch with what is going on in the country right now. It's not even close. How in the hell can you think that it is a good political idea to put up a now very well-known, disgraced president in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, the vice president that got absolutely annihilated in the November election last year? That is your winning message to failed presidential candidates? I mean, Joe Biden won, sure, but his tenure was atrocious. You've got Democrats now that are openly calling out the disaster that was the Biden administration. Kamala Harris ran one of the worst presidential campaigns in U.S. history. But you've still got Democrats grasping onto that. You've still got them holding Kamala and Joe tight. Like, that's a winning issue. Like, that's a winning narrative. Like, that's a winning message. All of this stuff ties together. I know we're talking about different levels of government and things of that nature, but this stuff isn't even comparable, folks. Democrats are so out of touch. They believe that they are going to turn this government shutdown into the Republicans are... I mean, you even heard Adam Schiff say in his thing, Donald Trump is cutting away food assistance from poor people. I mean, so that's the kind of messaging that you're hearing from Democrats, yet nobody is buying it. Nobody is believing it. Nobody is locking on to that is what is going on. Nobody is of the mindset that that is true. And it is truly shocking and amazing to me, 30 days into this government shutdown, that Democrats still have not come up with anything new to say. Democrats still have not come up with any new talking points. And their solution to the election that they just lost in November of last year is bringing out cardboard cutouts of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden? I mean, you got to be freaking kidding me. It's not even close. And so you've got, you know, John Thune on the Senate floor yesterday going ballistic. Here is another senator. This is Senator Ben Luan from New Mexico talking about some of the SNAP benefits. This is what's going on here.
Pass this bill now. Fund SNAP, fund WIC, before this hunger crisis hits our communities. So, Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent that the Senate proceed to immediate consideration of S-3071 introduced earlier today, that the bill be considered read three times and passed, and that the motion to reconsider be considered made and laid upon the table.
Is there an objection?
Mr. President.
The Majority Leader.
Thank you. Reserving the right to object, let me just point out, if I might.
So there you've got Democrats on the Senate floor saying that, we're going to pass some sort of stopgap legislation to reopen not the federal government, but provide benefits through SNAP and WIC. And following that is the comments that you heard earlier from Senate Leader John Thune. It's not going to happen. And the clock is ticking rapidly. I know that we've got a count up clock on the screen, but the countdown clock is 11:59 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night. And I said this yesterday, and I am very curious how this is going to shake out through the day today. Democrats are completely boxed into a corner. And as always, and as pretty typical for them, they've done it to themselves. Why is the government shut down right now? It is shut down right now because Democrats lost in November of last year. Democrats could not and still cannot wrap their head around the fact that Donald Trump won. I mean, some of them are still reeling about 2016. But they cannot wrap their head around the fact that they lost an election almost a year ago at this point. It's been almost 12 months. And they lost not only the White House, but they lost the Senate and were unsuccessful in gaining a majority in the House. And so they don't know how to deal with this. They don't know how to navigate not being in power. So they've kept the government shut down for the last 30 days, barring pay from federal employees, SNAP and WIC benefits cut off on Saturday. And if they don't move on this, I mean, that's fine, but it's their bed to lay in. I mean, they made the bed. This is not over the continuing resolution. This is over President Trump's agenda that was moved forward in the One Big Beautiful Bill. And they don't have to like it. They don't have to agree with what's going on. But that is the practicality of the situation that we are in right now. And there is no, I don't see an off-ramp for them. I don't know where they go from here. I don't know what the turnoff point is. I just don't see it. Because they don't want to give up. They don't want to concede. And if that's the case, then they are going to continue to get hammered over the shutdown. I played the clip and showed the data yesterday from a new Quinnipiac poll that showed that the GOP is gaining support amongst their base and independent voters during the shutdown because Democrats have failed to message it. So there's nothing for Thune, there's nothing for Johnson, and there's nothing for Trump to cave on. If Democrats care about SNAP, care about WIC, as Adam Schiff says, care about poor people, then just reopen the government, guys. It's really not that complicated. So we'll see what happens today. The Senate typically leaves on Thursday. So there's not typically voting that happens on Friday. It's not immediately clear, at least as of right now, whether Republicans and Democrat senators will stay in Washington, D.C. on Friday. If not, then things kick back up early next week. And we will watch what the results of this are over the weekend. And, you know, this kind of all of this builds into a larger thing that many of you have heard from me now for quite some time. And I want to play a quick clip from J.D. Vance yesterday. He was hosting a Turning Point USA event with Erica Kirk, of course, Charlie Kirk's now a widow. And he said something that is so refreshing to me and should be so refreshing to every single conservative that has been frustrated and fed up with the status quo. Here is J.D. Vance yesterday.
Okay, so here's something that I want conservatives, I want every conservative to remember. It's an important part of my entire political philosophy is we cannot be afraid to do something because the left might do it in the future. The left is already going to do it regardless of whether we do it. That is the takeaway of the last 40 years. And in particular, if you look at what we're doing, if Joe Biden wanted to deploy the national... Okay.
So there's J.D. Vance having just saying what needs to be said, and something that he did say that I think more conservatives and Republicans need to buy into. There's always this concept, there's always this notion that we take the high road, that we don't play these games. His direct quote, "We cannot be afraid to do something because the left might do it in the future. The left is going to do it regardless if we do it." He is absolutely 100% bang on with that. And it is one of the reasons that I think Donald Trump is so popular. And it's one of the reasons that J.D. Vance is a strong contender for a presidential candidate in 2028. Right? Because these are the kinds of things that are very refreshing for conservatives to hear. We are past the point of allowing Democrats to change the rules 24/7. We are past the point of Democrats being able to do whatever the hell they want, when they want, when it's politically expedient. And we have to sit there with our arms, with our fingers together, just waiting and playing the nice game and pretending to get along. To hell with that. If Republicans don't do it because of the concern that the left might react, we know damn well the left is going to do it anyway. We have seen it time and time again. There is example after example. This is one of my favorite things that I've heard come out of J.D. Vance's mouth since he's been the Vice President of the United States. It's a very powerful and strong thing to say. I think it resonates with a lot of conservatives. I think it resonates with a lot of Republicans that are sick of being pushed aside while the Democrats run roughshod on everything that's going on, and we just have to sit back and take it. We're frustrated with it. And it's why, one of the reasons why Donald Trump is as successful as he is. Because he has broken the traditional Republican curse of, oh, well, when the time gets tough, we don't want to do anything because we're afraid that the Democrats might do this to us in the future. Lo and behold, what happens? Republicans play nice. Republicans play by the pre-established rules. Democrats get in power, and what do, ladies and gentlemen? They change all the rules, and they play the game by their set. And we have to play by the old rules. No more. We're done doing it. Great commentary there from Vice President J.D. Vance. So a lot that we are tracking throughout the day today. President Trump landing back in Washington, D.C. a little bit later on after a successful trip in Asia. We've got a lot to get into. We'll do that tonight on our Patreon hangout for those that support the show financially. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. Check your email there. You should have a Zoom invite. That'll be taking place 7 p.m. tonight. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. Look forward to chatting and hearing from everybody tonight. And of course, we will do this show and cover everything unfolding coming up tomorrow morning right here. I do want to thank the Law Group for their continued support. The show would not be possible without Melissa Gott and her team. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday mornings, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and is available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great Thursday. We're back with you tomorrow morning right here on The Nick Craig Show.